Succession number 9938, Rule 9.
So what, Rule 9?
Well, the Devilish Enchantment, which had this terrible effect on a nation. And I always considered it was 95% of them. I never believed that Hitler had to fudge his votes. They were with him under this enchantment. But of course, since all that, I've had these devastating experiences, and I've become a person who's very much pro Europe and so on, and made speeches to Germans, and I've met them, and we're all on a civilized limb again, working away for a civilized Europe.
Which devastating experiences are you referring to? You mean when you're a POW?
No, they're devastating experiences of losing a world war. No, I meant it applying to them. They've been through the most appalling things.
Did your period of imprisonment leave any long-term effects with you in any sense, either physical or in your attitudes?
No, I don't think so. No. As a prisoner of war, you've got quite a time to think, and you've got a lot of pretty intelligent people around you to exchange views with and discuss things and so on. So there was no excuse for degenerating. I think one could modify that a bit. I think that when people had been prisoners for about 3 years, perhaps, that was a bit of a turning point, I believe. I didn't go as long as that, as you know. But that would have been something to watch, I think, and friends to keep you going if you're going to get into the years after that. I think one or two went a bit downhill there, but not many, because they're very determined lot to overcome everything.
One thing you said right at the beginning was about the best pilots being chosen for flying boats.
Yes.
Could you just explain that?
Well, one didn't know why for certain, but one assumed that that a flying boat with a number of people in it, I think they went up with 8 or 9 people in it, and they all had breakfast and dinner together and so on, was an expensive, very expensive thing. And also it had a direct impact on the Battle of the Atlantic. The Battle of Britain was important enough, but some say the Battle of the Atlantic was the important one, and perhaps they weren't far wrong. And on the sheer expenditure of what you were handling, whereas you could throw away a fighter that didn't cost $3 million in those days. One final thing I'd like to add, that when I got back to Britain, I took the opportunity of moving around in the air ministry as a mere flight lieutenant at that stage, and I inquired what was being done about the prisoners, RAF prisoners, being brought back when Germany collapsed. It was clearly going to do. And I was actually shown a plan whereby they were going to be told to stay in their camps until further orders, and then they would come back by train, which struck me as an appalling affair and quite ridiculous and indeed pretty dangerous with that country obviously in the turmoil it was going to be in. By various means, Group Captain Padden, who had escaped via Stettin, who was a well-known escaper, and I combined forces and talked to everybody we could think of, including people in Bomber Command. And this got through to Bomber Harris, in charge of Bomber Command. And he immediately said that and sent a communication out to all the RAF camps that when Germany is defeated, Bomber Command will fly back all RAF prisoners to this country. And that went out and was made known. And that happened so rightly.
Did you find that once you got back that the authorities here wanted to get information from you about your escape to help other people to escape?
Oh, yes. I went on a lecture tour on escape.
Could you tell me a bit about that?
Yes. Yes. Yes, I went a lecture tour of Bomber Command and also of people getting ready for D-Day down in Hampshire, and I was able to tell them quite a lot about escape. The main thing being, don't put yourself in the position of being captured at all, but evade immediately. And hide yourself away somewhere, because once you get marched away to a prison camp, then it begins to get very, very difficult. And of course, one always gave the advice that name, rank, and number is all that the enemy must be told, and he will be trying very hard to trick you out of this and get information, something to guard against.
Did you have any contact with MI9?
When I got back, yes, Brigadier Crockett and MI9, and we were introduced to that in various ways, and we gave talks within MI9, and we came away with a very high opinion of their operations. They communicated with us in various ways, aided escape aids in various surreptitious ways, never compromising the Red Cross, incidentally, which is essential in order to keep the food fresh. And they did this very cleverly. Prominent man is Major Clayton Hutton, who was brilliant at this and devoted more or less his whole war to this, and hence we got maps and diagrams of aircraft so that I knew how to fly a Ju-88 if I came across one during an escape, and in all sorts of ways, and one up for MI9. I don't think MI9 directly helped me on this escape any more than they assisted prisoners generally, which, as I'm indicating, was imaginative and good by maps and aircraft diagrams and how to work on an aircraft and one thing and another. But they didn't actually mastermind my escape or anything, nor would I have expected anything like that. One of the curious things on this is that whenever anybody escaped or almost escaped and got anywhere near a seaport and so on, the Germans are nearly always convinced that the British Navy had a submarine waiting for us. This is a terribly flattering, terribly flattering assumption, because we weren't that important enough to the RAF or the British Navy and so on. Submarines sent for us, but the Germans often thought this.
Was your escape publicized once you got back to Britain?
No, I think we lost something by that, because I was under strict instructions not to, and we're all very security-minded in the war, to say anything about it. Actually, looking back on it, I think it would have been a good thing to publicize more or less immediately as helping Allied morale. This astonishing, crazy wooden horse that came off. It made the Germans look so damn silly, too. And but decision was against this. And also, of course, there were, which I didn't mention, the terrible thing in 1944, the beginning, when the escape following mine, called the Great Escape, from Stalag Luft 3, where 50 of them were shot in cold blood, which put the end to normal escape, I'm told, and I can well understand it, by the shot by the Gestapo, by secret orders sent to the Gestapo. I think the main trouble had started that the great escape from Selegdov 3, another compound from mine, had taken place no great distance from the headquarters in that part of Silesia where Hitler had shrank back to towards the west, and he heard all about it. And Goering was in Nuremberg and so on, was clearly identified with agreeing to this, which was one of the things that gave him the death penalty. And secret orders were sent to wherever the prisoners were held in their cells. Friends of mine, chap who took my bed after I'd escaped and so on, friends of mine whom I knew well, were taken off and shot in the back in woods and this sort of thing. And one lot were shot. One couple of fellows, I think, were taken to be shot somewhere in the Hamburg area, I'm told. And the guard stopped to get new theatre tickets for him and his girlfriend for another night and so on, and affably saying as he went along that he's taking these two people to be shot, and he did. So that was the horrible part of that regime. But I must say, they told us, they put notices up about the time the Wooden Horse Stolen Journey effort was ready, saying that if you escaped and were attempted escape in civilian clothing, you were going to be shot and so on. And frankly, we didn't believe it. But it certainly happened to be true. So it was no act of gallantry of ours. We just thought it was ridiculous and not true.
Did the British authorities ever attempt to charge you for the cost of entertaining you in Sweden?
Yes. Yes, they did. Yes. I think it was the suit or something. Yes. Somebody wrote to us eternally asking for the money back. And we said, well, if you equip distressed seamen, you can equip distressed airmen from the RAF and so on. And the claim faded away in due course. We didn't blow our top, sorry. We just gave a cynical smile and answered rather blandly. Good old civil service, not missing a penny.
Did you ever meet anybody else who had escaped from Germany successfully?
Yes. The Max Swain escaped originally from Stalingrad 3. He mixed with orderlies and went out, and he got through, and we met up with him. Met up, what a phrase, met him after I got back. Yes, I go and meet ex-POWs every more or less first of November, many of whom were in Stalingrad 3 and other camps. We all meet up. I meant to add a little earlier when you were talking about me and the Germans, and to make it a little bit stronger, that I've associated myself very closely with people who are all in favor of Europe togetherness at this time, for every known reason, both defense and economically and in every known way. And the result is, of course, we have not had another war in Europe. This, when I was a boy, was quite unthinkable because always one or other of the powers was threatening the other. And although it's somewhat negative praise in a way, when you think it out, it's a very important praise. And also, I don't know what we would do at all with our industrial progress, which is quite remarkable and praiseworthy at this time, and I'm sure will be, if export trade and exports are taken up by the rest of Europe from this country were ever in any danger.